Howdy. Well, good morning. I'm Ken. I'm an alcoholic. You know, you come around here long enough and you say that, Ken, alcoholic. I've been going to some meetings lately where I think it's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? I'm Joe, I'm a drunk. I'm Larry, I'm a boozer. I'm Lenny, I'm a tippler. You know, you're an alcoholic, you know. It's if you don't know, read the book. That's why it's labeled, you know. But I want to thank the committee for inviting me here. And you guys should change this to a maxi conference based on the time it takes to get here. You know, I want to thank Greg and Mark and Pat for traveling 300 miles and never picking me up. And, you know, Michael talked about Clancy's tape, a disease of perception. You know, this is a disease of perception. When I look at a map, you would never think it takes 15 hours to get here from San Diego by plane. You know, it just doesn't look that far, you know. I got on the plane yesterday, and there, fortunately, there was an Al-Anon that I know from our area, Pat R., and she was traveling to Oklahoma on the same plane. And, you know, we just took off, and it looked like we were just going to go to Dallas. You leave an area where it's sunny and stuff, and then I fell asleep, which I do. I'm a great sleeper. And I just fell asleep, and they were making all these announcements, and I guess I wasn't hearing them. And it was right, we're going to be a little late, and then we're going to be a lot late, and then, whew, we're really going to be late. And we went to see Kansas and Oklahoma. It was great, you know. It was like you couldn't see anything, but you knew it. Could say, hey, I was there, you know. Finally, I knew we were really going to be late because they were saying we were going to be an hour and a half late landing, and we're going to miss our flights and all this stuff. So, you know, I start to get these ideas. So I took a piece of legal paper and I wrote on there, Al-Anon thought for the day, Friday, April the 25th, 1997. Just for today, let's be, and I wrote patience, you know, down across the line. So I folded it very nice from back and handed it to Pat. And she was listening to music, and she, you know, you could tell we're from California, because she says, hey, Ken, you want a kumquat? No, I don't want any kumquats. And so I gave her this thing, and she started to read it, and she started to laugh, and it's like, we're not a glum lot, you know? We are not a glum lot. We laugh at the darndest things. That's why I love alcoholics, because, you know, like, you know, you could go and have surgery, have both legs removed, and somebody would find something funny in it. You know, like, they would just say, that's just the way it is. Now, I know the sensitivity, people, oh, that's not very sensitive, yeah. Well, you haven't been given your industrial amounts of glum lot, you know? You know? You got to get rid of that glum lot, you know? But fortunately, we just laugh at all kinds of things. And every time I see Pat and Cliff, I'm reminded of a fellow that they have a Thursday night meeting, and there's a guy from our little noontime meeting that goes up there and speaks. His name is Jimmy T. And Jimmy T, when he came in, had a lot of things, but one of the things he had was untreated epilepsy. And he was reading the big book one day, the owner's manual, this book, the newcomer. And he's reading, he goes, if you want what we have, and the book went that way, and Jimmy went this way. And he just laid there and went through what he went through. And, you know, and people in AA have watched enough medical shows, they know immediately what to do. Put a bag over his head, you know. Hit him with a chair, you know. Put the big book in his mouth, you know. So anyway, he's laying on the floor. But you could see some of the people there on court slips coming up and picking up their court slips. That's okay. Really don't want what you have today. But you know, in most places, if you laughed at something like that, that's politically and sensitively incorrect, you know. And Jimmy and I have gotten to be great friends. He came in 1980, so he's 17 years sober. And the first meeting that I was chairing that he was at, he was about 4 or 5 days sober. And we had 10 chairs at this noon meeting, and he had a cup of coffee, and anyway, he had a seizure, and I was leading a meeting, and he knocked over like 3 or 4 tin chairs, and he spilled his coffee, and finally he got himself together, and he got seated, and of course, you know, I notice things like that. So I said, excuse me, what's your name? And he said, Jimmy, and he gave his last name. And I said, Jimmy, if you want to volunteer at this meeting, just raise your hand like everybody else, you know, like, and so we got to be real good friends. But, you know, that's the deal here. It's like we can laugh at things, you know, like the book says, you know, we laugh at things because we've talked enough about serious things. Now, don't get me wrong. One-on-one, I know there isn't a person in this room who doesn't have a major crisis today. And you're in the right place. But, you know, our literature says, you know, we insist on having a good time. We know that God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. And you can tell it's early in the morning. My mouth isn't even working. But it's like, you know, cheerfulness and is usefulness. You know, laughter is very healing. It's not about sitting around here trying to figure out what, you know, well, that was really bad. You know, we know it was really bad. And that's why we're laughing, because we know that you think it's even worse than it really was because you weren't there when it happened. And the people around you knew how bad it was. They ought to come and share your story, you know. But the deal is that we get to laugh. And the book is real clear. It says, you know, God does not create our misery. We create our misery. I'll say that again because there's some people with less than 5 years. We, the plural, we create our misery. You know, God doesn't do it. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is just observation and experience, that's all I'm sharing with you, is that we get a chance to listen to people share about all kinds of things, from financial problems to marital problems to relationship problems. Sometimes they're even the same. And about love and about jobs and careers. And you know, the big envelope here is that we are in a spiritual program. In its entirety, it's spiritual. And we are spiritual beings within this spiritual program. And all of our problems, no matter how we perceive them, whatever label we put on them, is a spiritual problem. And that's why we have the 12 and 12, you know, for those who want to do graduate work beyond the big book. And it says whenever we're, you know, whenever we're concerned, upset, you know, the spiritual axiom is it's our fault. It's not about anyone else. And I get a chance to listen to that. There was a great teacher 2,000 years ago who said the kingdom of God is within. And alcoholics, like most other people, are looking without. And one of the great paradoxes of AA, which I love all the paradoxes here, is the way out is the way in. You want to get out, you got to go in. Now, alcoholics think they need the fullness of everything. And after you're here a while, you realize you need the fullness of nothing. And that life gets really, really fun, you know? And it's like a tide. I live down by the ocean, and we get to watch the tide go out, and we get to watch the tide come in. And in the spiritual realm, that's called consolation, desolation. You know, when it's all coming our way, we know there's a God. When the check's in the mail, you know, all the good things are happening, we have this consolation. God is alive. He's in my life. I feel him. It's really good. But then there comes a period of desolation. And during that desolation, we feel like God has gone somewhere. He's off taking a hike. And somehow it's our fault. And it's nobody's fault. It's just really the soul going through a cycle. And that cycle in AA we call spiritual growth. You're growing spiritually. And these things that look like the financial problem and the health problem are spiritually being addressed. And we're going through this cycle. I love the wording in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because it was written for guys just like me. Totally unscarred by education. You know, there are lines in there that just jump out at you. It says, you know, as we become conscious of his presence. It doesn't say when he shows up, you know. It's like when we become conscious, and this whole thing is about a mental and a spiritual mindset where we just become aware. And you get to laugh in between because there's so much to be laughed at. You know, I don't know if you guys have heard it. They now have an official test. We've got it out in California now, that you can tell specifically the social drinker from the problem drinker from the alcoholic. It's a very simple test. You go into a bar and you take a fly and you put a fly in every shot glass. The social drinker will pick up his shot glass. He will see the fly and he will immediately call the bartender saying, "I need to have this replaced." Okay? The problem drinker will see the fly, take it out, and down the whiskey. The alcoholic is so easy to pick out because he's noisy. He's at the end of the bar. He's got the fly by the back of the neck yelling, "Spit it out! Spit it out!" You know? And that's who we are, you know? Where excess is not enough, you know? That's who we are. That's our brand, you know? We just know that no one else should be drinking our drink, you know? That's just the way it is. And life, when you're here a while, starts to come together in a way you never imagined before. It's like, you know, you realize that in order for you to win, you have to be present. So that means that if you're not where you're at, you're nowhere. So if you show up late, you've already missed what could have happened when you were there when it was growing. And the whole idea is like, you got to communicate this to newcomers. And they look at you kind of funny, you know? They really, really do, because they wonder, what is going on with this guy, you know? And we got to sometimes keep old-timers away from newcomers because they say the dumbest things. You know? It's like a guy sharing about, "Well, you know, I was in a pool last week, a little jacuzzi, and there were five naked women, and we had all the alcohol we could want." And the old timer says, "Well, son, you'll never have to worry about that again. You know? We're going to give you this big book. You know? You'll never have to go through anything so bad as that. You know? And you won the Yoo-Hoo Spike." Can you just take a break until we get this boy started, you know? You can ruin him anywhere along the line, but let's get him started first. And the deal is that you find out that this is about really developing a spiritual growth. You know, the other night I picked up William James' Variety of Spiritual Experience, and there's a chapter in there on mysticism. And if you read that chapter, he specifically addresses that when people use alcohol and other stimulants and depressants, they get these real experiences, or they perceive them to be real, you know? And this is what it is. It's a disease of perception. It's like a snail sitting on a turtle's back going, "Wee!" You know? And it's like, that's the way it is, you know? You know? It's never about what's happening. It's about what we're perceiving to be happening, you know. And that's why you bring people to meetings and you get them started into the big book right away, and you know, you get them to read the whole book. You get them to read the whole book. Sometimes I think we're isolated to the fourth and fifth step. You know, it's like, "Wow, if I get through this fourth and fifth step, then I'll be able to hump." No, you are the hump, you know? You are never going to be over you, because I'll tell you, just from a distance, you got a lot of work, you know? But the deal is that, and in between time, you get to laugh, you know? I hang out with guys that are just like me, you know? They say the most wonderful things, like, you know, you'll say to a guy like Michelangelo, they have this new painting in San Diego now that Michelangelo did, and they were just exhibiting it. And the guy said, "Who's Michelangelo?" I said, "He's a painter." "What'd he paint?" "He painted the Sistine Chapel." "Okay. Who painted the other 15? You know, like, you know, those kind of minds, you know? And you love those guys because they're you. You know, like they're you. Like, you're sorry you didn't think of that. Like, wow, I'm sorry I didn't think of that. You know, right now they have the Unabombers on all the papers. And the guy said, Ken, you know that Unabomber lived alone in a cabin up in the mountains. He had no electricity. He had no running water. I'm surprised he didn't go crazy. You know he's one of yours. You know, like you just say, hey, if he isn't, you're going to work on him. Get him over here. You know? But that's the whole deal. And in between, while we're in this search, while we're trying to figure it out, we're getting to laugh along the way. And that laughter constantly refurbishes us with enough energy to go on to the next step. And, you know, there's some great lines in here, like there's a few pages in there in the family afterward where it says, Dad has tapped into, like a gold miner, to a spiritual vein. And he has to mine it for the rest of his life. But he has to give the entire load away. It's recognizing in this little deal that the more we try to hold on to for ourselves, the less we end up with. The more we try to give away, it seems like the more you get back. You know, it's kind of like the little guy who wanted to be a mystic, and he went to see a mystic. And the mystic was living in this little room under a stairwell behind a huge, huge, huge temple. And the guy came in, and all he had was a little candle and a prayer book and a little bed. And he said, where's all your things? And the mystic said to him, where's yours? And he said, I'm just passing through. He said, me too. And once you develop the attitude that there's a total state of impermanence and there's no permanence anywhere, then you realize we're all passing through. Then it gets to take on a whole meaning that no one can explain to you. You've got to experience it. You know, when you experience the presence of God, there's nothing to share with anybody because it's like old news. It's like you can't share it because the minute you try to put it into words, it loses whatever it had. You know, sometimes you just know, you get this overwhelming feeling of the presence of God and you know everything is okay and absolutely nothing's different. And you just go, whew, all the questions are answered because there are no questions. There's no place to go. There's nothing to do. It's just, whew. And then you get on with the steps. And the nice part about our little deal here, these guys who put this together really knew who they were going to be working with. You know, it has enough for the intellectuals, enough for the remedials, and for anybody who's not sure, enough for them. You know, like, and as you go along, it says that, like, when you're going through this stage of your life where you feel everything, God bless you, when you feel everything, it's a spiritual experience. You got so much God, he's got to get out. Now, don't choke. That's a little too much. But the deal here is that it's a rigged game because when you're going through this feeling when everything is coming your way and you're going through this feeling of consolation that everything is good in life, what do? You go to meetings, you work with others, you read the book, you do all the stuff. And now, when it's not going your way, what do? You go to a meeting called a beep, it's the same stuff. So whether it's coming in or going out, it's the same deal. But I noticed something. This is a little personal observation. When you're going through the desolation, you're working the steps, taking the steps. When you're going through consolation, you're telling others how to take the steps. You know? So you really know where your sponsor's at all times. Consolation or desolation. And the deal is you get to have a good time in between because we aren't a glum lot. You know, this is about really enjoying. You know, I was going through this airport thing yesterday, and, you know, I landed finally in Dallas, an hour and a half late. And the lady said, well, there's another plane to Kentucky in 45 minutes, but you're at gate 38, and it's going out of gate 2. So I'm from California, so I got Nike sneakers, and I'm down the deal, you know, get there, and then I find out there is no plane. There never was a plane. They don't fly to Kentucky out of gate 2 ever. It's American Eagle. The gal who gave us that information is gone. But these other two women step forward and try to help me, and they say, well, we can't get you to Louisville, But you could go to Cincinnati. It's a little bit closer. Hey, at this state, I'll take it. And we no sooner got airborne when they closed the airport in Dallas. The pilot announced they just closed the airport. So those of you who are on this plane, we were one of the last planes to get out. So I get to Cincinnati having called Greg and Pat and Mark, or as they're known in our circle, Manny, Moe, and Jack, and leave these messages, you know, I'm coming to Louisville. No, I'm not coming on. I'm going to Cincinnati. And then when I got to Cincinnati, I got off the plane, and I just said, well, I'm closer now. And they're probably here. No. Greg had left a message, or called me and said, you've got to get on another plane now and come to Evansville. Okay. And where is that leaving from? Well, you're in the wrong terminal, and it's leaving in 10 minutes. So me and my trusty black Nikes, we head on down there. And you know, all the time this is going on, everything is okay. Because I'm either going to make that plane or not make that plane. I'm either going to get here at 6 o'clock, or I'm going to get here at 10 o'clock, or I'm not going to get here until today sometime. And the nice part about it is that I was one of the few people who knew that. The people around me looked like, they hadn't figured out that nothing was really happening. They thought something was really happening. And I figured, they don't really know us very well. This is nothing, you know. Something is like when your clock doesn't work. Or you got 2A batteries and you need 2C batteries, you know. Then you have major crisis. This is kid stuff. And the nice part about all of this is that once you get to the point where you know it's going to be okay, regardless of how it turns out, you develop a way of living a life that's unbelievable. A couple of years ago, I had a son who passed away. And I remember when we had him we moved him to the hospice, and we stopped giving him all the medication because it wasn't doing any good. And he kind of just woke up out of this coma. And he and I chatted. And one of the things he said to me, which will take me to eternity, was, Dad, I'm okay with this. I'm okay. And I hope you're going to be okay. And you know, it's like when you're working with a newcomer and you realize they've spiritually leapfrogged past you. They're so far ahead of you that they got to a place you can't even imagine. And that's what he did. And he said, I hope you're going to be okay. And I couldn't tell him at the time because I didn't want him to hear it that I wasn't okay with this. This was not okay with me. I didn't want this to be this way. It seemed as though nature was terribly out of order. And he just said, okay. And he held my hand and he was consoling me. And you know, I've been fortunate enough in Alcoholics Anonymous on many occasions to be with people when unbelievable things happen and has nothing to do with time in AA. They just reach this, they just get there way ahead of you. And they're spiritually just quantum leaped over you and they're there. And they're actually teaching you things that you thought you were imparting to them. They are actually dragging you along and teaching you. And you think, what a wonderful thing this is. It doesn't make any difference where you are in the pecking order. You're always in a position to be of service. And we never know who that person's going to be. We never know who's going to step out of the pecking order and be of monumental assistance to us at any given time. And that's why it's great to go to meetings and have so many people in your lives. We have a little girl, Nancy C. And Nancy C. took a 10-year cake. She came in when she was 16 years old. And she took a 10-year cake a week ago Monday at our meeting. And she led the meeting, not this past Wednesday, the Wednesday before. And her topic was the same as yours. We're not a glum lot. She said, you know, my marriage isn't real good right now. I'm separated from my husband. I got a 6-year-old son. I'm looking for work. The job I have really isn't doing that well. And, you know, she said, there really isn't a whole lot of what I would say is really positive stuff. But I'm sober. And I can see that there's a chance for me as long as I stay sober. And if I die accomplishing nothing else but my sobriety, to me, I've been a success. And Friday, when I was up with Peg up in Oregon, she dropped that six-year-old boy off at preschool, and somebody hit her as she was getting back in her car and killed her. And it was, you know, 7:30 in the morning, and this 26-year-old girl was dead. And when I came back to the meeting, that's all they were talking about, is that this total lack of control of anything. Here she was on a Wednesday talking about, you know, this is enough. And on Friday, it had to be enough because there wasn't going to be that we're aware of anymore. And you know, when you're sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, this is an exciting thing. I'm really excited about AA. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really get concerned when people just feel like it's always going to be this way, like I'll always be sober. All I got to do is just do nothing. You know, and that's not the way it is. You know, it's getting up and doing something, but it's also having some fun doing it. You know, it's not about a bunch of the other stuff. It's about having some fun while you're having fun. You know, and it's not about figuring anything out. I love folks who want to figure it out, you know. You know, somebody said, well, when I came in, there was a sign, think, think, think. I said, it was half a sign. On the other side, it said, stop, stop, stop. You know, you know, you know. Because it's not about that. It's about just getting out there. And no matter what you're feeling, you can take actions. And that's the great part of our deal, is that you can take an action even when you don't feel like taking an action. You can go and do this thing even if it's like on a day when you don't feel like doing it. You can go and do it. And you can have some fun in the process. And you know, it's not about... I was telling the folks this morning at breakfast, it's like the mouse who went out cruising the bars one night, you know, and Mr. Mouse, he was just out cruising the bars, and he picks up Mrs. Elephant, and he takes her home, and they have this wild sex all night long. And in the morning, when Mr. Mouse wakes up, he looks over, and there's Miss Elephant. She's on her back, her feet are in the air, she's dead as a doornail. And he goes, wow, one night of fun, and I spend the rest of my life digging a grave. You know, like, and, like, you know... And you wonder, where do those thoughts come from? You know, where do they come from? Like you're right, you know, you're right there, but you're not there. You know, and fortunately for me, I hang out with people who are right there because they can't be anyplace else. You know, and they have such great lines to say that they just say them, and you look at them and you think, how clever that they could see that so totally wrong and yet be so interesting. You know? You know? And in Alcoholics Anonymous, when people talk about their problems, sometimes they get the impression we're laughing at their problems. We're never laughing at your problems. We're laughing at your solutions. You know? You know, it's like, you know, they, well, you know, this never works. So I think I'm going to double it up. You know? You know? I've never had a successful marriage, but I think I'll start dating. You know? Like, it's like, you know, it's like we just do this stuff. And the reality of all of this is that our reality is necessarily not reality. You know, I started to say, and then I had a senior moment there, but I started to say, I was reading this thing by William James, and in it he was talking about all this stuff and mysticism. And he has a great two or three lines there. He said, we, meaning all of us, are in a realm of consciousness at all time. Whatever that consciousness is, we're in it, whether it's awake or asleep, aware, enlightened. But he said, all around us are other realms of consciousness that we could go into at any moment when we become aware of reality. And you know, that's powerful stuff. You know, and the big book repeats that theme. They refer to God as what? The great reality. Deep down inside of us is this fundamental idea. It's this great reality. And we don't have to be able to explain it to anyone. In fact, it's almost ludicrous to try. Because we're dealing with a mind. You know, the mind is like a fish, you know, net. It can catch fish, but it can't hold water. You know, it just stuff just goes through it. You know, like... Some guy said the other day at a meeting, you know, I just have a couple of things on my mind. And he said, and that's really a reduction in number, you know. And it's like, we, you know, because we usually have like pyramids of things going on, you know. We're over here doing intellectual stuff. We're doing the political stuff. And over here we're in Toys R Us. And sometimes they overlap, you know. You're like, oh, is this really happening? Or am I just think I'm doing this? You know, we almost get robotic. And you say, the deal is that when you watch people who've been around here a while, they seem to have a flow to them, don't they? Particularly the guys who've had and gals who've had some time. And I don't mean just time. I mean time, you know. And they just have this flow to them. And they kind of look at you like, you know, you're doing like Road Warrior. And they're doing like neener, 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 you know. and somehow, you know, I sure would like to do more neener, neener, neener and less Road Warrior, you know. But that's just the way it happens. And you know, when you get to come to these things and you get to hear, you're going to hear good speakers throughout the day. You heard Michael this morning and Peg and Charlie tonight. And so, the deal is that we all come at this from where we're at on a given day. Now, if you caught one of us at the airport, we could have an entirely different conversation. And that's the nice thing about it. You don't develop a vested interest in your own ideas. You realize that they're all going to be subject to change because you're going to have a new growth all the time. You know, the nice thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is the impermanence, because when you come in, if you were stuck where you were stuck, that wouldn't be very exciting. But the deal is you're not going to be stuck where you're stuck. You're going to get a chance to go places you've never gone, do things you've never done, and become aware of things that you never knew existed. You know, there was a guy one time called John of the Cross, and he had a great statement. He said, to get to the place you've never been, you're going to have to go away you've never gone. Alcoholics Anonymous is a way I've never gone. You know, it's a way where life is in session all the time, and hopefully I'm in attendance. It's not like I'm going to postpone this till Thursday or next week or next year, because that's the illusion. You know, and I like the words used in the book. And you know, sometimes I hear the word at a meeting and I have no argument with this. If this you want to use this word, fine. But people use the word denial. You know, he's in denial. She's in denial. Larry's really in denial. You know? Denial is not in the big book. It's not the word we use. The word we use is delusion. You know, we're driven by 100 volumes of delusion, you know. Denial is wimpy. It's too wimpy for alcoholics, you know. If you look it up in the dictionary, it says, someone who knows the truth and doesn't wish to acknowledge it. Denial. Delusion says, psychotic thought. You know? Where the person involved has no idea of what is happening, you know? Delusion, yeah. Hell, when you get to denial, that's spiritual growth, you know? Like, you just get there, you know? That's what it is. And that's why we want to make sure that we don't bring in so many words that weren't there initially that we lose the meaning of what was there initially. Because this book is going to have to be passed on to the next generation, and it's going to have to be passed on to generations after that. You know, this may be a bulletin for Indiana, but the disease of alcoholism has not been arrested. You know? It is not a curable thing. It's something we're still dealing with. In fact, now they're making up dances about alcoholics. They have the new alcoholic Macarena. And it goes like this. I'll teach it. It's very simple. It's put your hands on the hood, now behind your head, now behind your back. You know, like a... And it's a... It's kind of an arresting dance, you know. It's a people who do it said they feel confined afterwards. So you may not want to get into it. But the whole deal is that this stuff is going on all the time. You know, when someone gets pulled over by a highway patrolman and they're given a ticket for drunk driving, it's really hard to convey to that person they had a spiritual experience, that God intervened in their life and decided to do for them what they couldn't do for themselves. And deliver a very important message. And you know, they look at you like, I don't think that's the way I see it, you know. But then after a while, how many times have you been with somebody who is new to the program and they know what I hate? This is and about 6 months later, you say, well, I'm going to call my brother. He really needs this thing. You know? you can't know till you know. You know, you just can't know till you know. And that's why we keep people entertained until they find out. You know, we keep them busy. You know, like yeah, read chapter 6. Okay, what's that? Hey, it'll mean a lot to you at this. Read how it works again, because I think you're missing the critical points. You know? The whole idea is to keep people busy. You know, I like to tell this story because it's a guy that everybody knows, but John Madden, when he was with the Oakland Raiders and he was the coach, he used to have a deal where when the halftime was over and the guys were getting ready to go back on the field, he used to say to them, okay, this half, let's forget the mule and just load the wagon. And the guys would tear out, and they'd be killing everybody in the 70s and 80s, not in the 90s. And someone said to him, John, what does that mean? He said, I don't have the foggiest idea. I don't have the foggiest idea. I heard it somewhere. I liked it. I started saying it, and the guys would go crazy. You know, so as long as it was having the impact I wanted, I really didn't bother finding out what it meant. Guys were going to the Hall of Fame, coming back. Fred Biletnikoff, coach, what does that mean? I don't know. Why were you telling us? It worked. You got you to the Hall of Fame. So sometimes you don't have to have a reason. So you've got to develop your own deal. I have one for me that works. Sometimes you have newcomers that just kind of overpower you with 3,000 questions. So I've developed a little thing where I just say to them, the fish in the sea are not thirsty. Then I go get a cup of coffee. Fortunately, I work with guys who are into action, so about 8 minutes later, you see them in a corner surrounded by three other guys, and they're going, well, you know, the fish in the sea are not thirsty. They have no more idea what that means than I do. And then you get people who have PhDs, you know, intellectuals, they call you on the phone, Ken, does that apply to the fish in the streams and the rivers? You know, so it's just, Alcoholics are notoriously for scratching stuff that just don't itch, you know, and we do it so easy, you know. It's like here, what's going on is really not what's going on. What's going on is what's going on beyond what's going on. And if you know what I'm talking about, you are definitely in the right place. If there's some confusion, you're probably in the right place, you know. It's like some lady stood up the other day at our meeting and said, I don't know if I'm an alcoholic, but this is my 18th Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. You know, that's like a virgin taking a pregnancy test. You know, it's like a... A yoo-hoo, Swifty. You come twice more, I think you're hooked. You know? But that's the fun of having fun. I mean, last night we got into the hotel. It was probably about 11 o'clock, 11:30, and over here, and there was a bunch of us, and the woman who was running the bar was sitting right next to this room. She put like 4 or 5 pots of coffee and cookies out in that room, and, you know, cookies and coffee, you attract a lot of alcoholics, so... And we were in there, and we're laughing and scratching, and we're having great conversations from John of the Cross to Teresa of Avila to animals and things in the Midwest. But that's another story. But the woman who was running the bar stuck her head in, and she said, "You guys are having so much fun in here." And I figure, you're on the wrong side of the wall. You gotta come over the wall, you know. And then. But, you know, did you ever notice you can have fun doing things that you think were really corny at one time? You know, like, yeah. So what'd you do last Friday? Well, you know, I went 15 hours to Huntingtonburg, Indiana, and then we had coffee. and had these big cookies. And I hope they invite me back. Hey, you know? You. The hamster's dead, but the wheel is still turning. You know, like, whoa, 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 whoa. But you just do that. I mean, we drove by a guy the other day that we said we'd pick him up and take him to a meeting, and we drove by, and we thought it was funny that we passed him by. You know, this is like eighth grade stuff. We beeped the horn, he's waving, and we just kept going. And he's on the corner, you know, the guys are coming to get him. Beeped the horn, made a big... Just kept going, I guess. So we decided, of course, we were going to pick him up, so we made a U-turn. Well, he went us one better. He got on the bus. And we pulled up to get him, and he's in the back of the wheel. Now, if you called your high school teacher and said, guess what I just did with my life, they'd be getting a net for you. But this is what we do. And we do it all the time. You know, we do it all. And in the process of doing that, we get to go through what's in here. And sometimes we get to laugh about things. Sometimes we get to cry about things. Sometimes we don't know whether we want to laugh or cry. Sometimes we laugh so hard because we want to cry. And other times we're crying because we really want to laugh. And it's like, you know, it's a process. And the process is we're in it. And we're trying to the best of our abilities to grow along spiritual lines. And in growing along those spiritual lines, what's happening is our soul, which never took calisthenics or aerobics before, is being strengthened. And it's being strengthened by the laughter and by the pain, by the consolation and by the desolation. It's being constantly strengthened because we're in the process of being about God's work. And God's work is to develop, to the best of our ability, our own strengths so as to be of service to others. You can't be of service to others if you're constantly focused on yourself. That's not a big service. You know, people that say, well, I come to the meetings because, you know, I think it helps somebody. That's wonderful. Yeah. But the guy who's making the coffee is really helping somebody. And the greeters at the door. And, you know, I remember these same guys when you went out to see them. They were the brainy guys. You know, you say to a guy, you really need AA. Well, why? Well, for one reason, your life isn't working. Okay? Give me another reason. You know, like, that's the mindset they have, you know? It's like, and it's amazing how quickly, about 5, 10, 15 years, you can forget what you did in the beginning because somehow you're now aloof to that. And if you forget for too long what you did in the beginning, you'll have a new beginning. It's just that simple. You know, when you see a big book that's beat up, it's usually in the hands of someone who isn't. You know? And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you're not in an AA meeting, you're homeless. You're homeless. This is where you come. And the reality of my life today is a very simple reality, and that is I can say I don't know all the time and feel perfectly at ease with it. Some guy says, you never know anything. And I said, well, you got to give me credit for consistency. You know, like, I don't want to know anything. Because when you know something, you stop growing. Once you know it, you don't bother to look any further. People say, well, I've been to the meetings. I know what goes on. I know how to read the book. So I really don't need the meetings anymore. That doesn't happen in Indiana, I can tell. But we hear it in our area. It's like, and it's from people who have like 15, 20 years. We don't need it anymore because we know what's in there. We know. Not about, hey, how can we be of some service? How can we help them? But now we know how this works. And the deal is that if you're not doing the things you did in the beginning, as I said, there's a good chance you'll have a new beginning. You know, I love people who make cameo appearances in AA. You know, they just breeze in. This time it's going to be different. But what are you going to do different? I'm going to breeze out, you know? And then I'll breeze in. But this time it's really different, and then breeze out, you know? And we notice that those folks who make cameo appearances just don't seem to have any stability in their life. No consistency in AA. You know, the nice thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that you can go to certain meetings, and they have them here, and if you walk in and you don't see someone there, it's a surprise, because they're there all the time. And you immediately ask, where's so-and-so? Are they? They're out of town, or they went to a wedding, or their child, or so-and-so. But, you know, because they're part of what we call the fellowship. And they have come to understand that this is their role. You know, I sat the other day with a fellow who was a gunship pilot in Vietnam. Great young man. 40, I guess he's not that young. But he was saying that in the Mekong Delta, and some of you who serve there may know this, there's two statues. There's one of Jesus and there's one of Buddha, and they're 60 foot high. And in it, Jesus has his arm around Buddha, and Buddha has his arm around Jesus. And he said when they were training the pilots to go in that area, they had very specific orders, and that is, do not do anything to endanger those. They're part of the culture, you know, they've been here since whenever, and we don't want to hurt them. He said, but they told us we could kill all the guys we needed to. We could kill the people, but we had to preserve the statue. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do just the opposite. You know, we don't care about the symbol, we care about the person. We don't care about, you know, all the nonsense that they bring in with them, the paraphernalia that they think is them. We know that inside of that person is who they really are. And sooner or later, they're going to get in touch with it. And when they do, then they're going to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they'll become active. They usually become very active. And the deal is here is that if you're sitting in this chair today, I don't care what's going on in your life, you're a winner. I don't care what else is happening, you're a winner. And you're a winner because you have a chance to participate in your own sobriety. And there's a lot of folks who would give anything to do that. I've actually gone to people after they put a gun in their mouth and finished their life who their last conversation on the phone was, I can't live like this. I can't get sober and I don't want to live this kind of a life. And so in between the glum lot and all that other stuff is who we are. And you know, I'm so glad you guys invited me to come here today because I really had no place else to go. You know, I'd be out in the airport going, hey, where to go? You know, yeah. And when I finally saw Mark and Greg and Pat, I realized, well, this is it, you know, this is it, I'm here. And then we had to drive over here. And it was like the conversations that go on in Alcoholics Anonymous are just fascinating to me. And they're fascinating to me is because you can start a conversation from the end and work backwards. You can come in anywhere you want with total misinformation and contribute. You know, like you can just interrupt anybody and say, well, this is more important than what you're saying. Because why? Because I'm saying it. And you know, and we call it sharing. And it's like, well, I'm just sharing, you know. And I am so glad you guys did invite me to come here today because I enjoy these things. And I'm getting to see some friends that I don't get to see a whole lot of. And I get a chance to visit with you. And the point of my life is, what else would I be doing? If I wasn't here, what else would I be doing? And if this isn't what I'm about, then I don't know what I'm about. And you guys have always, always, always been there for me. Always. You know, there's like no exception. I can't say, well, on this date, Alcoholics Anonymous let me down, because it never did. And you know, there's a guy in our area, he's a crazy guy, and he always says, you know, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. We're the last house on the block. We don't care if you're black or white. We don't care if you're straight or gay. We don't care if you're rich or poor. We don't care if you have a great job, a poor job, or, he uses another word, no job at all. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is where we come together. And whatever we brought that doesn't work, we leave at the door. Because once inside, we're part of a thing that does work. And if you ever get confused about how it works, listen, we read it at every meeting. And in case they don't read it at a meeting you go to, you can find it in this book, The Owner's Manual. I want to thank you for letting me come here. I love you very much. Take real good care of one another. We're only on loan. God bless you.